a tough negotiation. When this happens, ask yourself, what is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement? Chapter 7. Invest in yourself and be a team player. About 8 years ago, I heard Pat Philly Crucial, a senior executive at Time Warner, talking about how she routinely went to 2 or 3 networking meetings a day. This absolutely shocked me. I couldn't imagine how she found the time for that kind of schedule. But Pat continued to explain that as she looked back over the course of her career, the one factor that she felt aided her success more than anything else was the incredible network she had built over time. She felt strongly that her connections had helped her get from one job to another. Well, okay, I thought, this is important. At the time, I didn't know what my next gig was going to be. I had been working in digital media for over 10 years, and I realized that I needed to broaden my horizons to meet people outside of digital, people who didn't necessarily look or think like me, who could show me what other possibilities might be out there. I thought if Pat could do 2 or 3 networking meetings a day, then I ought to be able to do at least 1 coffee a day. That was the beginning of the journey that led to a whole new career. The first thing I did was reconnect with Patricia Karpis, who you read about earlier, the dear friend I'd worked with at AOL years before. As it turned out, she was working on a variety of nonprofit initiatives and had even adopted an orphanage in Africa. At the time, I was doing very little on the nonprofit side, and meeting with her inspired me to start doing more. That connection led me to meet more people in the nonprofit space, and eventually to read the book, Half the Sky, by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudunn, about the oppression of women around the world. The book got me thinking about what I wanted to give back to the world. What was I truly passionate about? At the end of the book, the authors include a list of resources for people who want to take action to make a difference. One of these was the nonprofit organization Global Giving. After researching Global Giving online, I was so impressed with what they were doing that I tracked down and emailed the CEO, Mari Kureishi. I wrote, "Hi, I'm Fran, and I work at People. I love what you are doing and would love to be helpful to you." When we met, I explained that for years, I had been using digital to entertain people at MoviePhone, AOL, and People. And now I was interested in using the same digital medium in a more impactful way. This was exactly what Global Giving was doing. I asked Mari what the organization's biggest challenges were and how I might be helpful based on my knowledge and experience. She immediately said, "We're a DC-based organization, and I would love your help expanding our support base in New York." Together, we came up with the idea of creating a New York Leadership Council for Global Giving, which I co-founded with Brian Walsh, whom Mari later introduced me to. This was 8 years ago, and I've been working with Global Giving ever since. I'm currently on their board and have served as the board chair. This path was all set in motion simply because I decided to reconnect with Patricia. With my new commitment to networking, I also began meeting people in the tech startup world. Knowing that I had always been passionate about mentoring young women, my friend Greg Clayman told me, "You need to meet Soraya Darabi." She was at the New York Times doing social media. Now she's doing a startup. She's a force. At 26, she was on the cover of Fast Company as one of the most creative people in business. When I met Soraya, we hit it off right away. One day she said to me, "I know all these female founders who are having such a hard time getting access to financial resources and mentorship. You would be amazing at helping with that." My gut told me that Soraya was right. Pivoting to investing would give me a tremendous amount of flexibility, which I welcomed given that I had 2 toddlers at the time. It would also allow me to do more mentoring while also learning about a whole new industry. And as I had already been spending so much of my time giving free advice to startup founders anyway, investing in them made a lot of sense. That's the short story of how I went from media to investing. Since then, I've built a portfolio of 19 companies, 16 of which are female-founded. Here's my overall point. There's no way I would be where I am today if I hadn't begun to grow my network, as Pat suggested all those years ago, The story of how I got from there to here is a perfect example of what can happen when we focus on connecting with others outside the office. Before being inspired to really grow my network, I kept my head down and focused mostly on contributing to the company. I'm not the only one. In Chapter 2, I discuss the messaging we receive beginning at a young age, telling us to be good girls who sit at our desks and get our jobs done. As a result, many of the nice girls I mentor feel an obligation to do the right thing and do right by the company and team. To them, this means working as hard as they can and spending as much time as possible in the office. They spend their time taking on additional tasks, fixing problems that nobody else wants to deal with, and staying at the office late and coming in early. As I said earlier, there's nothing wrong with going the extra mile like this, but it does become a problem if it leaves you with no time left over to focus on developing yourself and your own career. That's not being nice, that's being a people pleaser. Of course, you have to do your job and do it well, but you actually have to do even more than that to succeed. You also need to proactively reach out to people whom you don't work with on a daily basis. Without those key contacts, it's easy to become isolated in a situation where the very people who can help you get ahead and who you can be the most helpful to have no idea how good you are, what your true interests are, or for that matter, that you even exist. I've seen so many nice girls who felt obligated to keep their heads down all day end up getting stuck at dead-end jobs, or worse, desperate when their jobs go away. In other words, many women feel pressure to focus on the group, team, or organization instead of the self, professional, and personal development. This pressure was echoed in the following statements from the women I surveyed. Whenever I leave the office for a meeting, I feel guilty, as if my colleagues will think I'm being lazy or slacking off. I already get dirty looks when I leave the office at 5 to pick up my kids, and this makes it even worse. I told my boss that I wanted to take a public speaking course, but he said no, because it wasn't directly related to my current role. But how am I supposed to grow into a new role one day if I don't develop my skills? I love the idea of networking more, but I just don't have time. I'm already working 80 hours a week. When could I possibly fit this in? I used to feel this way too, but I've learned throughout my career that it is possible to be a team player while still keeping your head up and growing yourself professionally, networking with others, and thinking about your future. And finding time to focus on your career doesn't mean you're doing the wrong thing or betraying your employer. The things you learn from others while you're out networking can benefit you and your company. Even better, the very qualities that make you nice will work to your advantage once you commit to getting up from your desk and engaging with the wider world around you. My own experiences can attest to the fact that once you do, people will want to help you, work with you, and support your development. There are three things that we should all be doing to stay relevant throughout our work lives and strike that perfect balance between being a nice team player and focusing on our careers. Invest in yourself, build your network, connect the dots. Invest in yourself. To invest in yourself and your future, you must build relationships within your company, do extracurricular activities that may plant future seeds, and stay on top of industry trends. Build relationships within your company. Every coffee break and lunch ought to be a chance to meet people, share ideas, forge new bonds, and solidify relationships. Avoid the impulse to sit at your desk all day to get work done. Meeting your colleagues is how you'll learn if there is another area in the company you may want to move into. Plus, networking with others who can help you get things done more efficiently is good for you and for the company. Most large companies have business resource groups that are organized around gender, function, ethnicity, or sexual orientation. When you find yourself in a business meeting that includes multiple departments, avoid the inclination to sit next to someone you already know. If there is someone in the meeting who is working on an interesting project, ask him or her to coffee. When there is a cross-functional project, offer to help. Getting access to a different part of the company may open your eyes to a position or career you never thought of pursuing. At the very least, it will help you do your job more effectively because you'll have established relationships with colleagues in other departments. Do extracurricular activities that may plant future seeds. Pursue other interests outside of your job. Volunteer. Join an industry association. The more you follow your passions, the more you can plant seeds for your future. During my tenure at Time Inc., I joined nonprofit boards and dipped my toe into startup investing. I was following my interests, but I was also planting seeds. In fact, I'm still planting seeds today. While investing in and advising startups is my main job, I'm also writing this book and advising the TV show Girl Starter. It's the next step in the evolution of my interest in mentoring and investing in women. If you broaden your horizons through activities outside of the office, you may end up falling in love with one of these areas and making it your next chapter. Stay on top of industry trends. One of the most important things you can do is to pay attention to cultural forces and industry trends. There are two crucial reasons to do this. First, if you see a trend that could be a revenue opportunity for your company, maybe it's a new consumer behavior or emerging technology, raise your hand to lead a team that will pursue it. As you read in Chapter 2, this is a great way to create an opportunity for yourself and your company. If you haven't been at the company for long enough and/or lack the political capital or credibility to get something started, this may mean that you have to do the work to prove that there is an opportunity here. Maybe you can start by chatting with a peer at another company that is dabbling in the space and finding out what their early results are. Second, it's important to study industry trends so that you stay relevant. A woman I mentored named Alicia had been working at a small ad agency for 10 years when she met me. She had started out as an assistant to one of the partners and worked her way up to running a creative team. Then the partners decided to sell the company to a larger firm. Part of the consolidation in the industry that so much of advertising has gone through as the landscape has changed to digital. Alicia didn't like the new owners and didn't have the digital experience they favored. When she thought about leaving, however, she didn't even know where to start. Her days had consisted of answering emails and sitting in meetings. Because she loved what she was doing, she hadn't taken calls from recruiters or bothered to keep up with the digital transformation in the industry. Now she was panicking. To avoid ending up like Alicia, it's essential to keep up with what's going on within your industry. Many of us feel disloyal or selfish for thinking ahead. But the hard truth is that no company is going to be that devoted to you in return. You must put your own career first. Build your network. In the years since I saw Pat speak at Time Warner, I've seen how networking has been a critical skill for my professional and personal success. Yes, it can be intimidating, and it takes time, but it truly matters. It's the most effective way to find people and opportunities that can help you advance, develop your career, and find new avenues for development and fulfillment. And it can help you whether or not you want to leave your organization. I've met many nice girls who feel uncomfortable with the concept of networking. Some mentees of mine have described it as feeling usy, like you're socializing with an agenda to take advantage of the other person, and that doesn't feel authentic or comfortable to them. If you feel ambivalent about networking, remember that you're not using anyone or serving yourself when you meet people. Networking is a two-way street, or more accurately, as the word suggests, it's about creating a web of connections, ones that can help you and can help the other people in the network too. Janet Caminos, the CEO of the startup Spotted Media, recently shared with me a great example of how helping someone else ultimately aided her. It's the quintessential story of how nice girls can and often do finish first. She was attending a networking event and feeling guilty because she was really supposed to be preparing a fundraising pitch deck. Sound familiar? She noticed a young man in the corner whom no one was talking to. So Janet went over just to be nice. It turned out he was looking for help in sales, which was her area of expertise. He asked if she would come to his office to talk to his team. Despite being so busy, she said yes and spent 2.5 hours with his team. Janet was happy to do this because so many people had been generous with her as she started her company, that she made this kind of activity a priority. and this favor turned out to be beneficial to Janet, too. The young man was so grateful that he made introductions on her behalf to both the firm that is building the platform for Janet's company and to the person who ended up being her lead investor in her current fundraising round. That's a perfect example of how networking has the power to benefit all parties involved. And of course, it shows the power of authentic kindness. How to get your name out to executive recruiters. Relationships with recruiters can help you find jobs, negotiate higher salaries based on market data they provide, and even pinpoint opportunities that you may have never considered. But how can you connect with them? Actually, it's not as difficult as you may think. Remember, recruiters' jobs depend on their own networks, so they are always hungry to meet more people. Here are three very simple ways of developing these relationships. 1. Research the top recruiters in your field and ask to be introduced to them by mutual connections on LinkedIn. 2. Find out who the top recruiters are in your field by asking your friends and peers. Every time you have lunch or coffee with a colleague, ask, "I'm interested in developing relationships with recruiters. Do you know anyone good who you'd recommend?" 3. Attend relevant conferences in your industry. This is where recruiters often go to scout for talent. Network intentionally. When you do network, there are specific things you can do to make sure you are doing it as effectively as possible. Don't be afraid to ask. In a recent survey of men and women, researchers discovered that women in general have a less goal-oriented approach to networking. They focus on finding common ground and socializing, while men have no problem approaching someone and bluntly stating what they want. Men generally go into networking opportunities with more clarity of what they want to achieve and focus solely on their professional needs, notes Kathy Goddard of Lighthouse Visionary Strategies, who has run networking groups for many years. Women often take a selfless approach and are more apt to consider what they have to give others. They hesitate to ask for what they want, whereas men are more comfortable making direct demands. Thinking of others isn't a problem as long as you don't fall into the trap of giving and never asking for anything in return from the people you're networking with. Remember, that two-way networking street goes in your direction too. Make sure you're being clear about your aspirations and asks, in addition to what value you can provide. For example, at every single meeting I've attended lately, I ask, "As I transition to creating a marketing plan for my book, I'd love to come back to you and ask for your support." I often tailor this to whoever I'm speaking to. If they work for a big company, I say, "I'd love to come speak at your company about the book when it comes out." If I'm talking to a reporter, I say, "I would love it if you'd cover the book." So many of these people have responded positively with their own ideas about how they can be helpful. But they probably wouldn't have thought to do this if I hadn't initially been specific about my asks. Diversify your network. Both men and women tend to build networks comprised of people of their own gender. We gravitate toward people like us. This is a universal tendency, but you will probably miss a lot of opportunities by failing to extend your connections all the way up to the people at the top, who still often tend to be men. New research published in the Harvard Business Review suggests that one of the reasons fewer women reach the top of the corporate ladder than men is that they are less likely to hear about available positions as early as their male counterparts. Men tend to be in the top positions in organizations, so structurally, they're in a position to hear about job openings or opportunities when they arrive and circulate those to their networks, said Lisa Torres, a George Washington University sociology professor who studies the hiring and job search process in corporations. In other words, men pass job openings to their mostly male networks, and so the news reaches women only after it has passed through several men. To level the playing field, we must add more men, especially high-status men, to our networks, and make our interests and competencies crystal clear so that these men think of us first when an opportunity arises. How many men are in your network? Who can help you connect to some more, especially those who can help you advance? Some of the most important mentors in my life have been men. From Lamar Chesney at Coke, to Adam Slutsky at Moviefone, and Paul Kane and David Geithner at Time Inc. Lamar took a chance on me and promoted me into a job that on paper I was nowhere near ready for. Adam encouraged me to transition to digital media. Paul and David were powerhouses at Time and very connected to the CEO and other officers at the company. They were among the first to learn about reorganizations and new opportunities. And being champions of mine, I certainly benefited from that early knowledge. Of course, I'm not suggesting that you ignore your fellow women as you rise to the top. One of my biggest priorities has been to pull women into my network and to advocate for them. If enough of us do this, it will go a long way toward balancing the ratio of men and women in leadership positions. Put networking into action. To give you a sense of how to get up from your desk and into action, let's return to Alicia. As you read earlier, she found herself in a sticky situation, with few connections and what was looking like a dead-end job at an advertising firm that had been recently acquired. She came to me looking for help finding a new role. Here are the three steps she took to start networking. Step 1. Create a networking strategy. First, we talked about two kinds of networking, open-ended networking and purposeful networking. Open-ended networking is about building your web of connections, while purposeful networking is identifying that individual within your web of connections who can help you get what you need. You need to do both kinds of networking in order to get ahead. However, it's nearly impossible to target one specific person for purposeful networking if you don't already have a network in which to find him or her. I asked Alicia to think about the people she knew whose work she admired. While Alicia didn't have a big network, she did have some connections. She just needed to figure out who they were and begin reaching out to them. She started by creating a mind map, drawing the connections she had and all the other people they were connected to. Alicia's mind map gave her a place to begin. Then, the power of a warm introduction, an introduction by a mutual acquaintance, allowed her to go from one person on that map to another. For busy people, a warm intro is a kind of shorthand for trust. If you are introduced by a mutual acquaintance, that person has in some way vouched for you. Rarely will you get a response to a cold email. Likewise, rarely will you be ignored if you've received a warm intro. If you're wondering how to ask someone to make an introduction for you, here's an example of an email I received recently from a young woman that I thought was particularly well-worded and effective. Hello, Fran. I hope this email finds you well. I wanted to reach out because I'm very interested in applying to the job title with company name. I noticed that you're connected with name at the company. I'm wondering if you know her well enough to potentially pass along my name and resume to her. I know that networking is a very important step in the job application process, and I would really appreciate it if you have the ability to help me make this connection. I wrote back, can you please send me a forwardable email with resume attached? Happy to send along. And just like that, this young woman received a warm introduction to a powerful person at her dream company. After you've created a mind map and strategy, then you need to set your networking goals. What types of people do you want to meet and to what end? How often are you going to get out there? And finally, how much of your networking will be technology assisted? And how much will be good old-fashioned face-to-face networking? When Alicia decided to make networking her priority, she decided her goals were to meet established advertising professionals who could potentially become mentors and refer her to opportunities and get her name out in the advertising world as someone worth knowing and ideally hiring. She decided to tell Tom, the partner she had been the closest to at her company, that she was looking to move on. He'd already taken a package and had left the company. Alicia asked Tom not only to personally connect her to industry heavyweights, but also to invite her to industry events that might be punching above her weight. This took some courage, but Tom had great respect for Alicia from the 10 years she had worked for him, and that made him more than happy to say yes. Tom had a huge network and was tied to all sorts of movers and shakers in his industry. But Alicia couldn't just rely on Tom's connections. She needed to expand her own connections by figuring out where else to network. Technology platforms like LinkedIn, Laevo, and industry-specific online communities can and should be a big part of your networking strategy. So should conferences, industry mixers, and meetups. Subscribe to email lists and online groups related to the industry you are interested in. Many conferences and events have their own social networking groups as well. Sign up for all of these, pay attention, and participate. True, not all industries have frequent conferences or meetups. You may need to work harder to find opportunities to show up. Attend lectures, read books, and seek out opportunities to connect with people in person. You can also consider creating your own networking group. I told Alicia about a woman I knew who had organized two different groups to meet with similarly ambitious young women. In one group, talking about anything not work-related is off-limits. In the other, which she calls her lean back circle, work talk is off-limits. Alicia loved that idea and started two groups of her own. In addition, Alicia found several networking groups focused on her industry, including Advertising Women of New York, and began to attend their functions. Once she had a sense of whom she wanted to meet, and Tom and others started making warm introductions for her, she had to set some discipline around making enough time to network. She knew it had to be a priority, or she wouldn't do it. Because she was playing catch-up and time was of the essence, she decided to commit to 1 hour of networking a day. Step 2. Show up. Showing up means being physically present, or virtually present when you're networking online. But it also means so much more than that. If you go to a networking event and stand in the corner staring into your drink, no one will notice you. Worse, they might notice you and form a negative impression. If you're shy, it takes a lot of courage to put yourself into a situation where you show up with confidence and make your presence known. You may be surprised to hear that I'm actually an introvert myself, so I know how hard this can be. Alicia decided not to go to events with a friend because she knew she'd end up talking only to her friend and not meeting anyone new. She followed some tips for icebreakers that I gave her and prepared her talking points in advance. And because she knew it would be easy for her to be helpful to others and forget about her own agenda, she made a commitment to herself to be sure to be explicit about what she was looking for, a new opportunity in advertising, with every person she spoke to. Top tips for introductions and icebreakers. I know how intimidating it can be to walk into an event and to start introducing yourself to perfect strangers. It can be even more difficult to talk about yourself without feeling like you're bragging or acting pushy. It has been important for me to develop specific strategies to introduce myself and break the ice without feeling inauthentic. Here are my top tips. Make the conversation about them. This strategy works especially well for nice girls who are genuinely curious about the people they're meeting and don't want to feel like they're bragging. It's also extremely helpful if you're shy. All you need to do is formulate an initial question or comment and then let the other person do the talking. If possible, do your research ahead of time and see who's attending a particular event that you'd like to network with. Then try one of the following openers. I've read that you're working on X. That's so exciting. I'd love to hear more about it. I've been following your career and I'm a big fan. What are you working on that you're excited about these days? The last time we saw each other, you were working on X. Whatever happened with that? This strategy still works well if you don't know anyone at the event. In this case, tweak your opening question accordingly. How do you know the host? What brings you here? Is this your first time attending one of these events? Find common ground. If you do your research beforehand, and you should, it's very likely that you'll find you have something in common with the people you are looking to develop connections with. If so, that makes a great opener. Try one of these. I see that we both know Sally Smith. Isn't she great? How do you know her? I noticed on LinkedIn that we went to the same college. What was your experience like there? I see that we both work in digital media. What current trends are you most excited about? Get introduced. If you know the host or someone else attending an event, ask her, who do you think I should make sure to connect with? Chances are she'll offer to introduce you to a few people. If not, why not ask for that too? If she suggests that you meet someone in particular, you can respond by saying, "That's a great idea, thanks. Would you mind introducing me to her?" An in-person introduction is just as valuable as a warm email introduction, if not more so. If you're networking online, showing up means not just reading online forums, but also commenting and engaging. You need to follow people on Twitter, retweet them, interact with them, and comment on their blogs. Use your authentic niceness to really connect. My friend Teresa Nemeshani, Microsoft's entrepreneur in residence, made her way into the tech scene from a career in management consulting with a strategy she called 100 events, 1,000 comments. Teresa immersed herself in the online life of the industry she wanted to be a part of. As she got to know the players and the themes, she began to comment on blogs, setting herself a personal goal of making 1,000 comments, a number she felt would be enough to make her known within that community. She also set a goal of attending 100 industry events during the same time period. These included meetups, pitch events, and even a conference that normally cost thousands a ticket. But she called the organizers to see if she could attend for free if she volunteered to work a couple of hours at the conference. Pretty quickly, all of those events led to lots of coffee dates, which she included in the 100 events needed to get to her goal. Her current role at Microsoft shows that her strategy clearly worked. Of course, there are many other ways to make a great first impression. Not long ago, I delivered an address at a big conference. After my talk, I was swamped with people who wanted to meet me. But there was one woman who stood out. She had a big smile on her face, a great presence, and a confident energy. And she was carrying a gift bag. "Hi, Fran, I'm Lisa Mayer from My Social Canvas," she said as she reached out to shake my hand. "I know how committed you are to causes that support young women and girls. I'm working on something I'm really excited about that I would love to share with you." Then she handed me the gift bag. Lisa and I had been introduced via email previously, but I'd been too busy to meet with her in person. As I found out more, I was excited about what she was working on. The gift was an example of the kind of work her company did. She needed a nonprofit partner that also focused on women's issues. So I introduced her to Dale Haddon of Women One. Together, they have since developed a Project Runway-style competition for Lisa's My Social Canvas designers. Hashtag Design for Her Education, as the initiative came to be known, features celebrity judges including supermodel Christy Turlington, actress Kelly Rutherford, and fashion designer Catherine Malandrino. Lisa used her niceness to show up in a big way that caught my attention and paid off for her business. Like Lisa, you need to show up every day. At work, at parties, at coffee dates, at your volunteer positions. With confidence, putting your best face forward. Being willing to meet new people. To introduce yourself. To say why you are there. Showing up is about having presence and speaking up on your own behalf. Are you too shy? Not sure what to say? Not sure you could be as gutsy as Lisa was when introducing yourself to a new contact? Try role-playing with a friend, practicing in front of the mirror, or even attending a public speaking course to improve your networking skills. Step 3. Make personal connections. As well as getting my attention with her charisma and kindness, Lisa had managed to figure out that I would be the exact right person for her to approach. No amount of gift bags would have worked if I hadn't been interested in what she was doing. But she had a plan to connect with me. You can and should make a similar plan when you are in purposeful networking mode. Notice that Lisa had done research on me and knew the issues I was passionate about. Background research is crucial. Alicia did the same thing in pursuing an advertising position. Once her former boss made warm introductions for her, she spent time online researching each person and thinking about how she could provide real value to him or her. Before you arrive at any networking event, read the industry trade news beforehand. Better still, read the trades on a regular basis. Be prepared to discuss the news or ask a question about what you've read. If you're meeting with a specific person, be sure to have checked their Twitter, LinkedIn, and blogs beforehand. This kind of preparation will give you confidence going into a meeting. If you still feel uncomfortable making an ask when networking, lead with a kind offer. When I'm networking, I always try to glean if I can be helpful in any way. If I'm in a one-on-one situation with someone new, I might ask directly, is there some way I might be able to help? In more casual meetings and at larger events, I'll only ask if it feels appropriate. Being able to be helpful in some way isn't about being a people pleaser. It gives me an opportunity to reach back out to them later in a way that feels more authentic. Even if nothing profound comes out of a first connection, I'm still building a valuable web. After following all of these tips for several months, Alicia ended up meeting a woman who had just started an ad agency and was impressed by Alicia's experience in building creative teams. She invited Alicia to join her. And while she now loves what she's doing, Alicia has also learned her lesson. She continues to attend networking events and grow her network so that she never has to feel out on a limb when the winds of change blow again. Connect the dots. Career success is increasingly defined not just by how many hours you spend at your computer, but also by your ability to connect to others, incorporate outside perspectives, and navigate groups. These are essential skills in today's ultra-connected world because no one and nothing exists in a vacuum. This means connecting the dots among ideas, businesses, and people. You connect the dots when you pair all of the things you've learned when investing in yourself with your amazing network. For example, you spot a new trend and then tap into your network to find a partner to create a new product with you. As a nice girl, you have an advantage here as long as you get up from your desk, because a lot of this connecting requires the very same people skills that you have spent a lifetime developing. But if you aren't investing in yourself and networking, you won't be having the experiences and insights that will lead to connecting the dots. I owe my entire career in digital to being able to successfully connect the dots. I was the director of finance for Coke's New York division in 1998. I was 30 and running a team of over 100 people for one of the world's most admired companies. I wasn't thinking about leaving. But one day I got a call from an executive recruiter about a senior vice president of finance role at MoviePhone. I didn't know what MoviePhone was, but subsequently learned it was a phone-based movie showtimes and ticketing service, aka 1-800-777-FILM. In my discussions with a recruiter, what interested me most was how MoviePhone was planning to expand to the internet. It would be the first company to provide movie showtimes and ticketing online. This was the late 90s, when consumers were starting to move to the internet for activities like shopping and entertainment, and I saw an exciting opportunity. So I agreed to take a meeting with Adam Slutsky, the COO and co-founder of MoviePhone. I liked him immediately and felt that I could learn a lot from him about the online space. I could tell that this new role would give me a chance to try something more entrepreneurial outside of my current realm of finance. Switching from finance to marketing would have been very difficult, if not impossible, within a large corporation like Coke. There's much more flexibility at an early stage company. My colleagues at Coke thought I was crazy to leave a company that was so stable, but I'm so glad I made the leap because it led me to an entirely new career in digital. Looking back, I can see that I was able to spot that opportunity fundamentally because I picked my head up from my desk to network with recruiters and focus on industry trends, and then connect the dots between them. Later, when I was at Time Inc., I told my team to come to me if there was an opportunity that we should be capitalizing on, or a major obstacle we needed to overcome. Whenever they showed up at my door, one of my first questions always was, "Have you talked to people outside our company? You don't need to reinvent the wheel. What are other companies' best practices? What are they doing in this space? Don't feel guilty or disloyal for spending time outside of the office. Remember, you're doing your company a service by bringing them all of this information. Go to conferences, meet people for coffee, come back with fresh ideas, and add even more value because you've invested in yourself, networked, and then connected the dots." Key takeaways. You must find time to invest in yourself and your career. This isn't selfish. It will also be good for the company you work for because you'll add extra value. Plant seeds for your future by pursuing an interest or hobby outside of work. When networking, while it's great to focus on relationships, Try to balance this by being clear on what your asks are. Commit to scheduling regular networking coffee, lunch, or drinks. Yes, this does take time, but it's essential. Connect the dots by pairing the skills and information you learn while investing in yourself with people in your network. Chapter 8. Set boundaries and be caring. When I was working at Coke, anytime a last-minute task or request came up, I was the first person to raise my hand and volunteer to stay late and do it. At the time, I thought this was purely a good thing because it showed that I was ambitious and dedicated to the company. And for the most part, it was a good thing. Stepping up like that certainly helped me get noticed. But in doing so, I was unaware of the expectations I was creating by always offering to take on last-minute requests. One evening, at about 5 p.m., I was in a meeting with the entire department. My boss had just gotten a directive from the CEO for our team to put together a report that night. He needed it first thing in the morning. This time, instead of asking for a volunteer, my boss just turned to me and asked, "Fran, can you stay late tonight and get the report done?" For a moment, I was flummoxed and unsure of how to respond. I suddenly understood I'd been too accommodating. By consistently being eager to take on more, I had set a precedent. And now my boss expected me to always be available. I stayed late and got the report done. It wasn't the end of the world, but I couldn't help but feel a little resentful about the situation. Plus, I was concerned about how to handle the situation the next time it happened, as I knew it inevitably would. At something of a loss, I reached out to a mentor in another department at the company and explained my dilemma. Without hesitation, she said, "Fran, you need to create boundaries, or people will keep taking advantage of you." This was the first time I'd heard the word boundaries in a work setting. I explained to my mentor that I wanted to be considerate and helpful and make sure I never came across as lazy or uncooperative. She responded, "I understand that, but if you don't draw a line in the sand, people will walk all over you. Plus, all of your peers are seeing this. If you don't stand up for yourself, they'll think they can take advantage of you too." I'd love to say that the next time my boss asked me to complete a last-minute work assignment, I stood firm and asserted my boundaries. But in truth, it took a few more times for me to decide that I'd had enough. He called me into his office and asked me to stay late one night to write another report. I had practiced what I was going to say in such a situation with my mentor. So I was prepared to respond nicely but firmly, while injecting a little humor to lighten a potentially uncomfortable conversation. I said, "I've been struggling with how to talk to you about this. Over the past 2 weeks, I've had to change my personal plans 3 times at the last minute to stay late. I'm afraid my boyfriend is going to break up with me. But truthfully, I wonder if this is a good opportunity for someone else on the team to step up and pitch in." My boss was taken aback at first. Then he said, "I'm sorry, Fran, I just assumed. You always volunteer for these things, and I guess I just got used to asking you." I already knew I was complicit in creating this dynamic, but it wasn't until the next week when another last-minute task came up that I fully understood how complex the situation really was. This time, my boss gathered the team in the conference room again and asked my colleague Josh to stay late to work on the project. Part of me was relieved, but I admit there was a small part of me that felt overlooked. I automatically feared I was missing out on an opportunity. Be careful what you wish for, right? In the end, I swallowed that doubt and reminded myself to have confidence in my contributions. There would be plenty more opportunities to take on extra work. I didn't have to be the one to do it every single time in order to prove my worth. Going forward, my boss was better about spreading these assignments around, and I gradually gained confidence in asserting my boundaries. I'm not trying to discourage you from stepping up and volunteering to take on responsibilities, especially early on in your career when you want to make a good impression. But it is important to look at how you're being treated compared to your peers. If you're being asked to pitch in or do a favor more often than they are, you want to make sure you're not being taken advantage of. It's also critically important to create boundaries at work to help you cut out extraneous tasks so you can focus on the things that matter. Without clear-cut boundaries, it's so easy to get caught up in the minutiae and let the important things slide, especially if you're a nice girl who wants to please others by never saying no. Of course, this isn't a problem that's exclusive to our professional lives. Between our inclination to prioritize relationships and the threat of being perceived as selfish or bitchy for saying no, setting boundaries and sticking to them and doing so nicely can be incredibly difficult. Here's what some of the women I surveyed had to say. I find it really difficult to say no to people, but then I get stressed and overwhelmed and can't follow through on all my commitments. I keep strict boundaries between my work and personal lives, but I worry that this hurts me because people think I'm unfriendly or a bitch. I'm so busy completing boring administrative tasks that I never seem to find time to focus on big, important projects. How can I balance this? The four-square model for setting boundaries. After my experience at Coke, I gradually got better at setting boundaries at work and maintaining them. But this is something I've never stopped learning, and many years later, my boundaries were challenged again in a big way. I was just a few weeks into my maternity leave after adopting my second son when I heard that the company had just named a new CEO. Several of my colleagues emailed me saying, "You'd better get in here. She's developing relationships with the key people, and you're missing out." Anxious and fearful of missing out on making a connection with the new CEO, I cut my maternity leave short and went back to work. But in retrospect, I saw that this wasn't necessary or particularly strategic. I could have reached out to the CEO and asked to meet for lunch to make a connection and then continued my leave. Instead, I allowed my aversion to saying no to take over my decision, and my boundaries came crashing down. Now I was back at work and my demanding job, plus I had an 18-month-old and a newborn at home. I was so overwhelmed that I went into what I call transactional mode. I so badly wanted to feel accomplished by checking things off my to-do list that I spent all my time attacking small tasks and let the big ones slide. For example, my focus at work should have been on writing a quarterly update that I had to present to our upper management, but I was procrastinating and spending my time on less significant tasks. When I talked to a mentor about my hectic but unproductive days, she was very blunt with me. She said, "You need to choose the things that really matter to you." I realized that I was falling into the same trap of failing to set boundaries that I had back when I was at Coke. It was just manifesting itself differently this time around. I saw once again that setting boundaries and communicating them kindly and clearly was more effective than taking on too much and regretting it later. I work best when I have a specific plan to follow. So once I was determined to be better at setting boundaries, I needed to impose a structure to force myself to create and maintain them. This meant taking an objective and honest look at where I wanted to focus my time and energy. Once I had that figured out, I could come up with a plan to cut down on the commitments that weren't aligned with my priorities. I sat down on my desk, and on a big piece of paper, I drew two lines, one vertical and one horizontal. In each of the four squares, I wrote down an area of my life that was important to me. They were me, friends and family, career, and the world. Then in each square, I wrote my top priorities related to that part of my life, limiting myself to a maximum of three priorities per square. I knew this would force me to say no to things to maintain my boundaries. My goal was to allow these priorities to take up the majority of my time, ideally around 80%, and to allocate the rest of my time to administrative tasks that needed to be taken care of. But when I took a step back and looked at my squares, it was clear to me right away that my calendar and to-do list were not aligned with the priorities I had identified. I began shifting my schedule and commitments by saying no to and delegating some of the requests that were not aligned. Over time, this four-square model has become an essential tool in helping me create boundaries and stick with them. Since I started using it, the amount of time I devote to each square has shifted from month to month. Some months are more weighted toward my career. Others are filled with family obligations. I do a check-in every 2 weeks to make sure that my calendar is mapping back to my stated priorities. On a quarterly basis, I also completely revisit my four-square to determine if I need to change any of my priorities. This is what it looks like right now. In the upper left corner, it says me, cardio, meditation. In the upper right, family, caregiver transition, new experiences. In the lower left, career, book, sale of startup in my portfolio. In the lower right, world, Girl Be Heard fundraiser, school district foundation planning. If you'd like to see a PDF version of the Foursquare model, please visit my website at www.franhauser.com. Of course, these are just my four squares. Yours will be different. Think about the areas of your life that are most important right now. Career or school, if you're still in college or graduate school, will almost always be one of the four. The others may be the same as mine, or they may be filled with a hobby, side hustle, or passion project that brings you great joy, travel, social or political advocacy, continuing your education, or a particular relationship. Even with my Foursquare model, it is still a constant struggle to balance my time among all of my responsibilities and passions, especially as a working mom. I'm often asked in interviews how I manage to balance everything or how I do it all, and my honest answer is that I don't. Instead, I try to do my best at those priorities that really matter to me. The Foursquare model simply helps me define and constantly reevaluate what those things are. I recently sat down with a mentee named Sarah, who is in her mid-20s and works as a media planner at an ad agency, and helped her create her own Foursquare. Sarah's squares were me, friends and family, career, and political advocacy. We started by talking about her current priorities. She was thinking about dipping her toe into politics by joining the campaign team for her friend's father, who was running for mayor in her hometown. She also had a close friend who'd just broken up with her boyfriend of 4 years, and Sarah wanted to prioritize spending time with her friend over the next couple of months. In her career, Sarah realized she hadn't spent enough time building her network, so she wanted to make that a priority. She also had a personal health issue that she needed to put front and center in her me square. Next, we looked at Sarah's calendar and to-do list for the last month and realized that she was spending only about a quarter of her time on the things that matter to her. She needed to reshape her calendar and her to-do list, which meant taking a hard look at what she was going to drop. Sarah was doing a lot of community service for her friend's church youth group, which she felt good about, but it wasn't aligned with her priorities. She decided to reduce her commitment to that in order to focus on the political campaign. We looked at how she could stop spending so much time attending various youth group meetings and events and instead help in small yet impactful ways. She told her friend, "I have so much on my plate, but I'd love to help you. I have a relationship with a local news editor I can introduce you to so that you can work on getting the group some press coverage." Again, she drew a boundary while being thoughtful and helpful and without leaving anyone hanging. Meanwhile, at work, one of Sarah's peers was spearheading a project to revamp the corporate cafeteria and had recruited Sarah to join her. This was taking up a lot of time, but it wasn't helping her reach her professional goals because there was no one on that team who could help Sarah from a networking perspective. We talked about how Sarah could extricate herself without leaving the team hanging. She had another friend at work that she knew would benefit from forming a relationship with someone on the team. So Sarah went to her friend and asked if she'd like to take her place. Then she went to the team leader and said, "This is something I'd love to be helpful with, and I'm grateful for the opportunity, but I need to focus on other pressing things right now. The good news is that I've already lined up a great replacement." Setting boundaries in your career square. Work-life balance is a battle for everyone, especially women, and while it's a subject that I care deeply about, it's not the focus of this particular book. I recommend Tiffany Dufu's Drop the Ball and Anne-Marie Slaughter's Unfinished Business for specific advice on this topic. Here, I'll focus on how to create boundaries to protect your time at work so that you can spend the bulk of your time on the top priorities in your career square. Here are some of the techniques that have worked for me. Get clear on your goals. When I originally created my Foursquare and got to the square for career, I found myself wanting to write down a million things. Limiting myself to only 3 items helped me clarify my top priorities, which were acquisitions, identifying companies to acquire in the e-commerce space, leveraging social media to grow our audience, and achieving our revenue goals. Before you can begin to create boundaries, you need clarity on your priorities based on your company's goals and your own personal career goals. This will help you decide what to say yes to and what to delegate, decline, or put on the back burner. If you're not sure what your priorities at work should be, take a stab at it and run it by your boss. Try saying, "This is what I think I should be focusing on based on the company's goals. Does this look right to you?" Don't stop there. You need to know what success looks like for everything you take on so that you can prioritize accordingly. If you're assigned to a project and in the kickoff meeting there's no definitive discussion of what success looks like, raise your hand and ask, "What does success look like for this project? What is going to make us feel great when we're done?" That kind of direct question will go a long way toward helping everyone visualize the specific target goal. Create filters. Once I knew which three items I needed to focus on, acquisitions, social media, and revenue, I saw that I needed to find a way to cut out extraneous tasks so I could spend the majority of my time on these items. By that point in my career, I had over 100 people on my team at Time Inc. To prioritize, I needed to create filters. For example, I decided to only go out on a sales call if it was either with a strategic partner for the company or if the potential deal would bring in over a certain amount of revenue. When it came to startups that wanted to meet with me, my policy was that I take a meeting with the CEO, or else I delegate it to someone on my team. I called the list of things that I wasn't going to do because they were filtered out using these criteria, my to-don't list. Looking at this list was absolutely freeing. It became much easier to make decisions and say no to people because I was simply adhering to my predetermined personal policy. I used the same technique when it came to my philanthropic work. I'm so passionate about philanthropy that it's very easy for me to say yes to everything and spread myself way too thin. When I found myself on the host committee for three different fundraisers and the board of directors for two organizations, I knew it was time to create a filter. Taking a step back, I decided I was most passionate about empowering girls and women, and I decided to focus primarily on philanthropic work in those areas. Finding this clarity was really beneficial for me. It took the stress and agony out of decision-making about which initiatives to support. Best of all, it gave me an easy and honest way to say a kind no to requests that fell outside of this filter. This sounds like a wonderful cause, but I've chosen to focus on organizations that empower women and girls, as this is where I found I can add the most value. To create your own filters, go back to the goals and priorities you listed on your Foursquare. If a meeting or task will help you meet one of your goals in any way, it's an automatic yes. If not, before saying no, carefully consider who is making the request. If it's your boss or someone more senior who may be helpful to you down the road, it's also a yes because it will help you grow your network. If you're in a more junior position, I understand that it may not be possible for you to say no to the tasks that others, example, your bosses, are asking you to do. In this case, your filters will be helpful in prioritizing your daily to-do list. It's a good idea to get your boss's buy-in once you have applied your filters. You've already gotten his or her approval of your goals, so you should be on the same page about which tasks are the most important. During your next meeting, try saying, "I really want to make sure I'm making the best use of my time, and I realize that I was devoting too much time to X, Y, and Z, but they're not adding value to the company. I wanted to let you know that I'm planning on deprioritizing those things, unless you think they're adding more value than I realize." Set fences around your schedule. Once you know what your specific goals are, it's essential to protect the time you need to devote to meeting them. My solution has been to set strict fences around my schedule to protect the time I spend focusing on creative tasks. As I transitioned from a traditional corporate job to working for myself, this has become even more important. Many of the young women I mentor who work as consultants or freelancers have also benefited from setting strict boundaries to make the most of their time. This can be very difficult when juggling multiple clients who each think they should be your top priority. A young woman I mentor who is a marketing consultant told me that she sets boundaries by focusing on only one client on a given day and not checking email while she works. This method helps her stay in her flow and be more productive. If something urgent comes up, she asks her clients to text her, but only if it's about something that is truly time-sensitive. When setting these expectations up front, she makes it clear that this is how she does her best work.